silence is over.
This is the predicament I'm in these days. Sometimes it gets real tough, but we find a way. Cause I needed your love before yesterday. But for now, if you make me smile, I guess I'll stay.
Hey everybody, welcome to KLBP 99.1. You're listening to Tea Time with Cinnamon. I'm your host, Cinnamon, coming to you live from beautiful, lovely downtown Long Beach. It is a beautiful Sunday. Glad to be back in the studio. It's so gorgeous out and we have a great show for you today. But first, Mother is on board. Hey everybody, you're listening to KLBP 99.1. Yes, Mother has spoken. She has landed. Have you heard The Confessions 2? That is out as of July 3rd. Yes, Confessions 2 on the dance floor. It was Madonna Day all day July 3rd. It's Madonna year, Madonna life for life. Anyway, you're listening to KLBP 99.1. This is Tea Time with Cinnamon. I'm your host, Cinnamon. And we're coming to you live from beautiful, lovely downtown Long Beach. We weren't in station for a couple weeks and it felt weird. Let me introduce my co-host, Breeze.
What it do? What it do, people? I missed y'all. How was y'all barbecue day?
Right? Oh my God. It was like boom, bam, boom, bam, bam.
I don't want to say different words that will get us in trouble, so I can't even say a famous song by Outkast, but let's just say it was an explosive day. That's yes. How we could put that.
Right. It's good to be back in the studio. I love it. Like, this is my happy place. So, you know, we have a great show for you today. It's funny because if you listen to the songs that I play, it's usually a little bit have to do with what, you know, what our topic is.
Yes.
So that's Papa Don't Preach.
That's what I was saying when we was doing Facebook Live. A lot of people that listen, if you know,
you gotta get
we
a
also
hint.
Do it live. And I'm like, with our special guest, I was like, hey, this is a hint. I like this. Go, bro.
So today, speaking of Papa Don't Preach, we have Lane. Tell me your last name again.
Egudin.
Yes, Egudin. I didn't want to get it wrong. I'm sorry. Lane Egudin in the house. Hi, sir. Talk to me. How are you?
I'm glad to be here. And it wasn't a long drive because we've been living in Long Beach for the last 26 years.
Long Beach. love it.
This is home to us.
Awesome. I love it. So what are your pronouns before we begin?
He, him.
Okay. All right. We love that. We love a he, him, right?
Oh, we love a he, him.
We love a he, him.
I know you do.
Oh, yes, he do. All right.
Beautiful couple.
I know, right? All right. So, Lane, you are PhD, right? Yes, I love it. So, dad, educator, and author of A Family Maybe. Tell us about that. A Family Maybe? Why is it maybe? What's going on here?
I published a book 2 years ago called A Family Maybe, Two Dads, Two Babies, and the Court Cases That Brought Us Together. It was the book I never planned to write. I teach English and linguistics at Los Angeles City College. I've written a lot of academic stuff, you know, chapters, studies, what have you. But what happened was that my husband and I decided to raise a family. So we we had multiple routes available to us, even, you know, a few years back when we started. Surrogacy and international adoption, maybe private adoption, but we really wanted to go through foster adoption because we live in Los Angeles County, and Los Angeles County has the largest foster care system in the country.
Yes.
Larger than New York. Larger than New York. So at the time that we went into it, which was roughly 20 years ago, there were over 30,000 kids in Los Angeles County alone, which was roughly a quarter of all the foster kids in California and a large chunk of almost 500,000 kids in the country. So what we wanted to do was to give a home, a loving, permanent, forever loving home to one or two kids from the community. And so we all rah-rah, we learned a lot about it and things like that. But things started to go wrong pretty much from the moment we went in, and I decided to document it because I realized there was nothing about it. So what if you want to go into the system and bring a child or two and what will you do when things are not happening the way they're supposed to?
Right.
So I started documenting our journey, and so that whatever the outcome would be, we would have something that I can share with others, and so they can maybe learn from it, and maybe, you know, be a little bit better educated about it than I was.
Yeah.
So our journey took place over 3 years, and it was full of drama, and core drama, I should
say.
From
the beginning, I bet, right?
Core, yeah. And it was a very transformative journey to me and to us. You know, of course, you know, we have two daughters. They're sisters. And
biological sisters, right?
Biological sisters, half-sisters, speaking, but sisters. And it was also a journey of growth. Personal growth, learning about ourselves, learning about parenting, I usually describe it as a warm family building story, two dads, two babies, no experience. But it was also kind of a real heartbreaking, heartbreaking, nerve-wracking drama. Because we just did not know for a very long time what was going to happen to us as a family, what was going to happen to the kids. Are they going to stay with us? Are they going to get separated? And all kinds of crazy situations that the courts put them and us through. So this is what the book was about.
Yeah. So do you feel like that you went through that because you and your husband were a part of community? Or do you feel like that's just the process that people go through when it comes to adoption?
It's a meat grinder, I would say. It's a crapshoot. Can call it many different ways. But I deeply believe that the system is not set up to serve children's best interests. At the time we went in, it wasn't that the system was very gay friendly. There's so many kids that had no homes to place them in. So they started to open up. We're talking about late 1990s, early 2000s. It started to open up to the LGBTQ community out of necessity more than out of any sort of acceptance.
Yeah.
Right.
And so At the time, it was very sort of like hush-hush under the radar.
Yeah.
They weren't out there publicizing. They were kind of quietly publicizing into our community, and we could read between the lines here and there. And so we were, I would say, in the early 2000s, we were in the first generation of out LGBTQ families.
Yes.
Because prior to that, if there was a child, specifically in a gay household, not so much in a lesbian household, but in a gay household, it would have been 99% of the time the product of a heterosexual relationship or marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So it was only starting in the late 1990s, early 2000s, that they started to place children in LGBTQ households. I can actually read to you a little bit about the book from that path. You know,
okay,
about that
yeah.
path to. Mm-hmm.
So when you decided to adopt, how long had you and your partner been together before then?
Oh, that's a great question.
Your husband, right? You guys are married?
Not my husband, but back then we could only be partners because, as you know, that we did not have same-sex marriage
exactly.
in 2008, which is in the book. So I would say at that point we'd been together 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Seven, 8 years. And so this was a very... very conscious, very intentional decision. And I usually, when I speak to straight people, mm-hmm. I tell them that mm-hmm. gay parenting is always intentional.
Oh, yeah.
It's never
noobs. We have, yes, you have know. To. You have
yes.
to.
You know, uh-huh. we do what we do, and we have plenty of it, but.
Right, yes.
But
we can't, biologically we can't do it.
We cannot reproduce. Right. So, mm-hmm. so to us, this was a very conscious decision. It was very there was a lot of planning involved. There was a lot of commitment involved from the beginning. I think
absolutely.
That, in a way, already sets us apart as parents because mm-hmm. we had to plan for it. We had
right.
to want it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish everybody would be as intentional as we were.
I know.
There are so many, kids born, I think, in situations where they shouldn't be born.
I always say people should take child parenting classes before they are getting married, like have that conversation. Are we going to have kids? What kind of parent are you? What kind of parent do you see? Like, and you should go to classes, go to
absolutely.
Child development. I mean, and
30 hours.
Yeah.
Intern. Hours,
right.
Criminal background, you know,
everything.
The life scan.
Why is it so like, I know. Why is it so taboo? Like get out there and talk. We talk about like, you know, what kind of, are you verse? Are you bottom? Like, you know, it's like,
yeah.
Why not talk about, do you want kids and how do you know how many, you know, everybody, heterosexual too. Like,
you know what, with heterosexuals, sometimes, not all, mm-hmm. because I got to make sure I don't piss off people that's listening. Sometimes they figure because they are heterosexual and if they're going to be intimate that, hey, we're together, children's going to come up. If it happens, it's going to happen. Are we going to have that conversation at the time versus
mm-hmm.
being proactive like you're saying, and Dr. Dad,
Dr. Dad.
Oh, as we were talking, I was
Dr.
like, oh my
Dad.
God, we're going to call him Dr. Dad.
That,
there it is, do it, Dr. Dad.
Dr. Dad.
that, like you said, intentional, because we also got to think about emotionally, as I'm hearing you talk, and then
definitely.
We were talking mm-hmm. Before going live, and I was like, wow, the emotional stress that you and your husband had to go through, as well as the mental stress that you and your husband had to go
mm-hmm.
through. Financial stress, but that anxiety that can come up because, hey, we are two dads. We're going to be two dads. We're in the LGBTQ
mm-hmm.
community, and here we go with somebody else wanting to actually be racist or discriminate against us because we just want to have a loving family. So all that anguish plays into it too, which I'm sure you speak about in your book, right?
Yes. And when we were going through the process, there's sort of a double standard the way it was applied to us as adoptive parents, maybe a triple standard because we're
mm-hmm.
also gay parents as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yes.
And the way it was applied to the birth parents, where the decision was very much not intentional, was just shocking to me. How the system was really scrutinizing every single thing we did, even though we really tried to provide the best home we could. And I guess in some ways we could because we were two professionally employed adults working full time, all that. So so committed to these kids versus the system sort of telling us anything but you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anything but you.
Wow.
As adoptive parents, anything but you as gay parents.
Parent.
So you have to
wow.
kind of, you know, And so, yeah.
But yet, I mean, I hear all the time these situations where they just want to put the mother or the father, who are very unfit, mm-hmm. you know, want yeah. the kids in yeah. the home, because that's essentially what they're goal is, to have a home for the children, not caring what kind of home it is. You know what I mean?
And what's sad is that what I discovered, and I pretty much highlighted in the book, is that most people involved in that decision making mm-hmm. will never meet the kids. Mm-hmm. They have hundreds okay. and hundreds of
yes.
files on their desk,
right?
Which describe
it's just another paper,
the reports
another case.
Written by someone else,
mm-hmm. yes.
and they make those life-changing decisions right. for the kids and for mm. the families that are actually raising them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and in our situation, we were shut out of the courts, and we tried to go in. We actually petitioned the court. We hired an attorney to make us part of the case, to what's called the de facto parent status, and we were thrown out. Mm-hmm. In a matter of like 2 minutes, we were thrown out of the courtroom,
wow.
and we couldn't go back for the next, I would say, couple of years until we actually went to the adoption proceedings.
What is up with so, Judge Judy?
Yeah. yeah. But at the same time, all these people that are present in the court, and I'm not talking about birth parents. Of course, birth parents want their
right.
children. I mean, that's
yes.
not what I'm talking
yeah.
about. I'm talking about the judge. I'm talking about the county council, whose job is to protect the county,
mm-hmm.
not protect the kids, protect the county.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the ever-changing, endlessly changing line of social workers, children's attorneys who will never, well, social workers might meet, but the county council will never meet the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
all of them making decisions for the kids that are those, you know, fragile, tiny little human beings that
right.
we are raising day after day, week after
exactly.
week, month after month, and as it turns
yeah.
out, year after year, 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what, you're giving us so much good information, Dr. Dad. And the one thing we didn't do, because we were so excited about getting this show started and you giving us all this information, where can individuals find you, find your information, find your books? Because all I hear is we're talking to history. We're talking to
right.
someone
mm-hmm.
that has changed.
So much knowledge.
That,
so
that
changed this for
changed.
Us.
No, you've
but,
been
but,
through.
But
right.
you've made
no
change,
change
for a lot of LGBT individuals to be
actually,
able to adopt.
You
yeah.
actually went through the process and had it done. You know what
yeah.
I mean? It was successful.
When I share our story, my message is that even though you hear all this, it may
mm-hmm.
sound a little kind of scary. Don't be scared.
Right.
Okay.
Don't be scared. If you understand the system, if you have the right resources, go in, because it makes such a difference. It makes
mm-hmm.
such a difference in the life of the child and in your life
mm-hmm.
to have a child at home, and especially when the child, when bringing the child, you know, I might start crying here, but
aww.
That
so
does
right.
not have a home, that does
right.
not have that loving family, does not have those arms to protect them.
Right.
And there are so many of them right here in
yes.
this community, right here in Long Beach.
Absolutely.
Right,
absolutely.
Here, right here in Long Beach.
Well, I'll tell you, my mom was adopted, so this
oh.
is why it is like very like close, you know, subject to me, very personal. She was adopted and fostered a few times. So, you know, where she landed was kind of like, you know, just relatives. So, I mean, I think about her journey, you know, and what it was like. And also, I know other families that I often speak to every day, they adopted 4 children. They're a heterosexual couple, but they adopted 4 children. And so I often think, like, do they know what this child is going to go through?
Right.
Like, regardless of the love, the support, the everything, just the feeling of, you know, that you can do your best, but the feeling of, am I really here? You know what I mean? Am I really wanted here? You know, and that those feelings come off to generational, because I
right.
feel that
right.
I felt her, you know, her void. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, I know you do, like, everybody does the best they can, you know what I mean? Like, to especially if they are wanted children,
right,
is so different.
Right.
You
yeah.
know what I mean? It's like, you are intentionally here. We chose you. You know what I mean? And we choose you every day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. My grandmother, who was our closest ally in the family,
the Russian-speaking grandma who was right there. The first
I was going to ask you where your accent came from.
Yeah, but she was. Yeah, she was. She said, if you haven't gone what you guys have gone through, you might not have been as attached. Well,
yes.
I don't know. It's a little harsh, but maybe exactly because it's such a, it's the journey was so much more complex and still is in some ways because foster care leaves a mark on whoever was there.
It sure does.
And so it never quite goes away. But if you're there, if you're there all the way through their lives now and in the future, if you've given that sort of commitment, it's such a deeper journey, such a deeper parenting journey. We have friends who've also done surrogacy, and we celebrate them. Well, wonderful, you have a kid coming out. That's wonderful. But when you go from what we've gone through, trying to give these two kids a permanent loving home, despite all, it's a very deep journey, and it's also a political statement. It's just, it's
absolutely,
in many ways, on many levels, on many levels that we fight for these children.
We
didn't
do.
Produce them.
Yeah.
You know, our kids are not LGBTQ, despite what people might think.
Right.
They're not.
And that's a different, deeper kind of level of love.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because, yes, I get it, the bond, that's a separate kind of love where you just like, there's no love like it. But this is a love where you're like, I don't even know the child, but yet I already love the child.
I mean, think about it. Just kind of something popped into my head. Like, they say, about, gay kids are born to straight parents.
Yes.
With us, we have straight kids that were raised by gay parents.
I know, right?
We're like flipping
exactly.
The script completely.
I know.
It's weird a little bit.
It takes two of them to make one of us.
Yeah, and ultimately, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because there are kids.
But,
yeah.
We were talking, like I said, before the show, and I think a lot when it comes to tradition, mainstream America, having their perception of what family is supposed to look like and how we're supposed to have the man, the woman, we're all religious, we have the picket fence, we have a puppy dog that's probably fluffy, and certain people in mainstream America, they're okay with that, even if that picture becomes toxic or that picture becomes broken, meaning the man or the woman has left because they both do leave. The man or woman is abusive. The man or woman is creating
Have
an
issues.
Environment for now the children that's in the household. And it's like, okay, we're going to either pray it away. Are we going to counsel in a way, which I don't have any aughts or disagreements with therapy, but where I get upset is that these individuals that you were naming that would never see these children, they're injecting their personal beliefs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And saying, okay, because you are same gender loving, you're not capable of giving love. And my thing is, well, how am I not capable of giving love? I come from love. And here's the plot twist. I'm like, okay, well, my parents were heterosexual. The only thing that separated them was death. My father passed in 1993. My mother, and I say it all the time, has not looked, wanted, thought about having another man. She said my father left very big shoes. She is now 87, be 88, God bless her, in September. And we have these talks now, and it's different from when I had them with her when I was 18, when I lost my dad in 93 to now. But as a butch, as a gay, masculine-identified boy, masculine-identified woman, I'll be very honest with you. The same love that I received from my mother and father is the same love I give in my relationships with a feminine lesbian woman. And for me, as much as I wanted to have children, I didn't want to hold them. I didn't want to bear them.
Right. Yeah.
I just never did.
I was like that too.
So I would look for women with children so I can have a ready-made family, right? Not realizing the traumas they had. Not realizing what they came with and not realizing how that spilled off into their children. And then sometimes what I got to see when I was like, well, you know what? I'm just tired of every time a relationship ends, the kids got to go. I lose out. I don't get to have the kids. Let me think about adopting and having my own. Now it's, oh, well, you're a single gay woman. Well, what does that have to do with if I can afford the kid and I can take care of the kid and I can give them a stable lifestyle and provide stability?
It's the gay.
It's the gay.
The gay. Yeah. it's just crazy because it's like, you know, with heterosexuals, sometimes it's like, oopsie, we just had a kid. Oops,
right.
I'm pregnant. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like with us, it's like you have to like really work. I have a child also from a previous relationship, 16 years of a relationship, and it was intentional. We wanted him, and we tried for him, and we tried, and we tried, and we tried. And we finally got him. He's now going to be 24 this year, sorry. And
it's about the same age as our kids.
Yeah, and he's just the best thing ever, you know, because we wanted him, and he feels that love, like no matter what goes on in life, She carried him, so it was like, that is biologically hers.
What I hear both of you say is that your relationship is a manifestation of your love, and so are your kids.
Yes,
should be a manifestation of your love. They they should be wanted, loved, and intended.
Absolutely.
You know, So it's when it doesn't happen is when the trauma begins. But when it doesn't, then that's how it should be. That's how it should be.
Right.
And the way I was hearing you, like basically you described yourself, you described the partner that you had, you described what you were looking for. What I usually say, do not reject, redefine.
You were
defining what you wanted in your life. You were defining the relationship you wanted in your life. And so did we.
Mm.
So did we. In my personal experience, okay, so I knew I was gay when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
I was growing up in the Soviet Union, where I was fighting in prison.
That's going to be a great story that we'll get to.
We'll get to. But what I knew also was that I always saw myself as a father.
Mm. Yeah.
So I had this vision
that's
in my
gorgeous.
Head of myself in the future as a single father.
Oh, really?
With two kids.
Oh, okay.
I ended up being a married father with two kids.
Okay, okay. I love it.
The way that prophecy sort of came
and
true
is that
to
like,
me. And I was thinking, you know.
How do you feel? Is that like, okay, I love it. Fulfilled either way?
I feel fulfilled. I feel fulfilled. That's what that's who I wanted to be. And that's. But part of it was like, okay, that's the vision I have. I'm following it. Mm. I'm not. In a way, I'm kind of like I'm ignoring.
Bonus.
I mean, what people may like or may not like about it, because I'm making my choices.
Right.
I'm claiming my space wherever I am, and
I love that.
But 20 years ago, this was a little bit different. In that, picture a black man and a white man walking together.
Yes.
Both of us pretty tall. You may assume. And in our case, you would assume correctly.
Okay. They make a beautiful couple, y'all. I got to see the pictures. I got to see the family pictures.
Yeah, they are a couple. Now, throw in a couple of Hispanic girls.
Right.
I love it.
Mm. Right? We're like a walking strobe of light.
Yeah, I love it.
Rainbow Coalition is all
Rainbow
that.
Coalition.
I love
we're
it.
We're seen.
Yes.
Whether we want or not, we are seen. People see us. Uh-huh. People see us. People know. People giving us looks. And I ignore it. We ignore. We got used to. Okay, well, that's on you.
Because you're redefining.
I don't define myself by what you think about.
Right.
I love
myself by who I am with, who I'm raising.
Right.
Absolutely.
Let's not waste any more time. First of all, you're listening to KLBP 99.1. And we're going to have Lane, if you're just tuning in, Lane.
Egudin,
I'll get Dr. Lane Egudin is going to read from his book, Family, maybe, or maybe. All right, let's go.
Thank you for that. I'll read the opening chapter.
Yes.
And just to remind you, my book was published 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's published by University Press. It's called Hooligan Press of Portland State University. We're actually working on a second edition.
Oh, okay. Great.
And it'll be coming out later this year with a foreword from the head of Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption. It's a nationwide foundation which helps people adopt from foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
And I'm thrilled. I'm really
thrilled.
Boy,
you're doing it. You went up there. You got them, huh?
And where can we find your books?
Okay. So the the print copy you can order from my website. You can also find it on Bookshop or Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Amazon ran out of copies, and I have no idea.
Wait a minute. Did you say, unfortunately, Amazon ran out of copies?
They're in stock and print. The ebook is available on Amazon, but if you want a print edition, it's my website.
You better do it, Dr. Dad.
LadyGoon.com or Bookshop, which mm-hmm. we love Bookshop. This
love
support independent bookstores or Barnes & Noble.
Love it.
But once the second edition is out, then it'll be also
then
out.
You'll
but
be
but
back the for the second edition.
The ebook is everywhere, and you're absolutely welcome to.
And you know, because Cinnamon is big on community and making sure that everybody knows where to find everybody, and mm-hmm. this I really feel it's something that we need in our community.
Oh, yes.
Can you spell your website out for us? Because we want to make sure that they get this book.
Oh, and if you order from me, which is the same price as you find anywhere else,
okay,
I'll be happy to sign it for you. I'll sign and mail
love
it for you.
Love it.
I'll be very happy.
All
to
right.
Do it.
What's the website?
My website is laneigudin.com, which is L-A-N-E, like mm-hmm. left lane. Mm-hmm. L-A-N-E. I, G as in George, O, U, D like dated, I, N. Igudin. I-G-O-U-D-N. So laneigudin.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Facebook, at Lena Gooden.
I love it.
I love it.
All right, let's go. KLBP, you're listening to Tea Time with Cinnamon.
So, A Family Maybe, Chapter 1, Curbside Delivery.
I love it already.
It was on a hot, early summer afternoon, just before the breezes would begin blowing inland from the ocean, that Jonathan, my husband Jonathan, shot me an irritated sideways glance. Where is she? Didn't she say early in the morning? That was hours ago. What's taking her so long? A 6'3" athlete with the face of the Bridgerton lead, my partner John was lining up daisy patterned onesies and burp cloths by the bassinet in the baby room. I heard him vacuum this room earlier, and before that, tidying up the crib and the toys in the baby room upstairs. Patience, dear, I said. Just give her a few more minutes. She should be on her way. Like John, I was trying to control my anxiety by being useful. Yet, I couldn't help rushing to the window every time I heard a car drive by. Jackie Willis, our designated Los Angeles County social worker, was neither here nor responding to my calls. Did the county change its mind? Did they release the baby to her mother, Jenna? We'd been living with this uncertainty for months. Jenna was due around Memorial Day. But with office closures and Jackie out of medical leave, the baby could have gone to the wrong home. But that Memorial Day, I received a phone call from Babushka, my Russian Jewish grandmother. Mazel tov, she announced. Your Jenna gave birth today. How on earth do you know that? We heard nothing from the county. I just know, she said in her raspy, confident voice. Так что не волнуйся, сам увидишь. Don't worry, you'll see it for yourself. I relayed her announcement to John, and he chuckled at my dear 84-year-old grandma, our closest ally in the family. I chuckled too, but deep down I felt even more anxious. What if she was right? I had no experience raising a newborn, nor did John. Zero. We'd been trained and certified, but that was just textbook learning. Were we really about to become caretakers of a tiny, fragile life, 100%, 24/7? What were we getting ourselves into? 3 days later, a social worker called from the hospital with the news that the baby had been born on Memorial Day, just as Babushka had said. But she couldn't be released yet. She had sepsis, a potentially fatal blood infection, and had to be put on medication. Other arrangements had already been made by Jackie's Department of Children and Family Services, DCFS. The newborn would not be released to her mother. Instead, she would be detained, that is, put in the court's protective custody and placed with us as an emergency foster home. The baby would remain with us as her long-term foster parents, while Jenna would be given an opportunity and resources to reunify with her child. Sepsis made it easier for the county to carry out its plan. Jenna recovered quickly and was discharged home to continue, as we were told, with her drug rehab and counseling. Meanwhile, the baby was improving on antibiotics, while the court on the DCFS request formally detained her. But Jenna came back to breastfeed, and the nurse leaked the secret. Devastated and desperate, Jenna refused to leave, pleading with the staff to let her take her baby home. On June 6th, the phone rang. I'm on my way to the hospital. Jackie, the social worker, yelled over the freeway hum in the background. Jen's still there? Oh, yes. Still there, camped out, refusing to leave. She knows I'm coming to get the baby.
Wow.
Poor Jenna. I couldn't imagine how she would feel or what she would do once Jackie got there. My chest tightened and was becoming real for us, too, after all these months. Really real. Our life was going to split into before and after. At 4:30 p.m., a black SUV pulled up to the curb in front of our house. Jackie? John ran out the front door. I followed him out onto the porch into the blindingly bright afternoon. Jackie didn't hand the baby over, but waited for John to take her out of the car seat inside her vehicle. In John's hands, the baby looked small, like a delicate light brown doll, mm-hmm. her face no bigger than John's palm. All she had on was a pink onesie with the word baby embroidered in white across the chest. Despite my hesitations, a strong affection washed over me the moment I saw her. Barely awake, helpless, innocent, and John just melted. Eyes on the baby, breathlessly, he carried her into the house. Jackie looked shaken. Jenna confronted her in the parking lot, yelling, accusing of betrayal. Jackie handed me the cooler bag with several bottles of formula and a 3-inch binder with medical information and placement papers. The baby and the bag, no baby blanket, nothing else. Then she glanced at her watch and said, "Gotta go, guys. Trying to beat the rush hour." I thanked her. Jackie got back into her SUV and left. It was done. I found John inside in the hallway, standing still with a baby in his arms, awestruck. Keeping his eyes on her, he passed the infant to me. Then he picked up his car keys from the dining room table and headed out. I knew he'd be back in a few minutes and not alone. I'm going to skip just to the last paragraph of the chapter. I was still feeding the baby when the front door opened and in walked John with a toddler, holding him by the index finger, her cheeks rosy after a day of play at her preschool, the baby's older sister, Mariana.
Wow.
So what I'm doing here, I'm bringing into our home about a third of the way into the story.
Why?
Because, you know, it all seems to be about the baby, but when, by the end of the chapter, you realize, wait a minute, there are two babies.
Yes.
There are two mm-hmm. baby sisters. The older one is already living with us. And here we just had the curbside delivery
right.
of the newborn infant.
DoorDash.
So from here
DoorDash
on,
babies.
DoorDash. This is way before DoorDash.
Okay.
Way before DoorDash. But basically, things are going to get crazier and crazier you know, as we go into this, because unfortunately, the courts are going to just go nuts over the whole situation with birth parents, with, you know, and with all kinds of things going on.
Let's not give away, because you need to get the book. You know, this is KLBP 99.1, Tea Time with Cinnamon. You need to grab that book. This is our guest, Lane Egodin. And the book is called?
A Family Maybe.
Family Maybe.
Two dads, two babies, and the court cases that brought us together.
Don't you love that? I can already see, like, even a show about this. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be a movie or something, because so if you're out there and you're a filmmaker, I mean, contact us. You know where to find me too.
Okay.
Yes, that's
and I could be the, you know, the bail person in the court. What do they call them?
Because that's about the
yeah, there you
the
go, bailiff. There you go. That's all. Wait. Were they in the court? That was my plug for Marsha Warfield. Let me just say this, because from our conversation and you reading the excerpt from your book, the babies are biological sisters.
Half sisters, same mom and two different dads.
Wow.
My question, during the process, do you and your husband feel that it got easier with the second baby? Being that, hey, they've already gone through the process. Because when the first baby, when your first daughter mm-hmm. came to you all, she didn't come straight to you, correct? From what we were talking about.
Right.
She was already in the system.
She was already in foster care before.
You and then you and your husband say, hey, come on in. We daddies. We're going to take care of you.
Right.
And now you have the opportunity to adopt her sister. Do you feel like you were given grace since you had already went through the first adoption?
Right. Unfortunately, it actually got much harder with the second one, because with the second one, the birth father was also in the picture.
Oh, wow.
And there was also proceedings between. Oh,
that's a change up.
Yeah. How much of the book should I give away? Well,
not much. Get the book.
That's a change up right there. That's a change of story right there.
That the birth father was an adult who prayed on that team.
Ah.
On the team line. So right there, you also got this whole other layer of criminal proceedings going on right there in the courtroom between the father and the mother, and each of the birth parents claiming the baby, while the mother is also trying to claim the older child, while the mother herself is in no position to take care of anyone. She needs to kind of build her own life from with all of this, you've got the laws, you've got the judge who's got her own biases,
right?
And there's a family, us,
right,
20 miles away, taking care of these babies around the clock, then putting them into preschool because we had to continue to work during the day, mm-hmm, but then at night it's still us, you know, stretched, just the two of us, no help, no support.
And I'm sure the anguish there, like, are they coming to take our daughters?
I know. I was just going to say that.
It came close a few times, especially with the newborn.
Wow. I mean, we see it on TV, and for some of us that live it, obviously, it's like, I'm looking at these angels, and they're ours. We're taking care of them. We're doing everything that law say we should do.
Yes.
And some.
Oh, my gosh. Above and beyond.
But because my partner is same gender, because I'm in this community of alphabets, I am about to be discriminated against, and probably the best thing that could have ever happened to these children, it's going to crumble because of people's beliefs, people's prejudices, people's just being discriminatory. But we do have a good story when it comes to you. Like you said, your daughters are now ages.
Yes. What are their ages?
21.
And
20 and 21. Okay.
Yeah.
Are they close?
They are. Mm-hmm. They used to be closer when we lived together.
Yeah.
But at this point, we're empty nesting. They launched. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still helping and supporting them in many ways. Our older daughter graduated high school. I was telling you, just right here in Long Beach, and she works at a theme park.
Okay.
Full time. She's actually now the lead in her unit, and
all of
21 turned 22. We're very proud of her.
Gorgeous.
And our younger daughter is away at a university. She's one of the UCs.
What?
Yes.
No,
yes,
she's
yes.
not coming up with two dads in the household.
And how?
Look at that.
Did you? Do they? They know, obviously, right, that they were adopted.
Of course.
Obviously, yes, but obviously. When were you? Did you let them know, or did they ever ask?
We didn't open up their story as we're growing up, because clearly you wouldn't say the 5-year-old, you would tell, you know, the 15-year-old. But so by the time the book came out, I think they knew most of it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We never hid the story. And when you said, you know, it was just such a wonderful thing for them to grow up with us gay dads, I'll be honest, it would have been the most wonderful thing would have been for them to grow up in their loving birth family.
Right.
You know, I'm not trying to rub the cradle here at all. No, I mean, it's really, you know, grow up with your parents, with your birth parents, surrounded by love, care, support forever.
Absolutely.
That's great. But unfortunately, that's not the situation which most foster kids are. And so that's when we came in and we tried to provide the best home, the best
love. They got
love.
The bonus family.
That's
what
I was just about to say, the bonus family. Bonus dads, bonus moms, we love it.
But at some point, I think, you know, the nurture kind of takes over. Yes, you know, you're not biologically ours, but you are our child, and we are your parents.
Do they know their biological mother?
It's a closed adoption,
so it was not our
choice, honestly. Right. Uh-huh. But that's how things went before we were able to finalize adoptions. There was, you know, it was not an open adoption; it was a closed adoption. And so I really hope that their biological parents were able to get it together and become, you know, fully functional and have families, you know, mm-hmm. but I really don't know what happened to
them. And how did they feel about the LGBTQIA to having two dads?
Well, as our story overlapped with the fight for equal rights for same-sex marriage,
yes.
for, you know, in the early 2000s. So I think one of the earliest memories could be being pushed in a double stroller down Ocean Boulevard, you know, in the gay pride parade.
All right now.
How cute.
So, little activist.
So, yeah,
that's
but
so
we
cute.
It wasn't just something that was happening, you know, at the same time. We were very much enmeshed in it because we were in those parades. We were writing those letters. We went as far as testifying for the Judiciary Committee of the U.S. Senate, trying to overturn Defense of Marriage Act, which denied us the right to get married. You know, the first time in 2012, it didn't
right.
pass, but it passed. You know, later, we were there, but also like smaller things, like when our kids went to school, and it was here in Long Beach Unified.
Mm-hmm.
The first year, we had to fill out the emergency contact forms. That was only mother and father.
Mm.
You know, I petitioned mm-hmm. the petition, the school district to change the forms. It should be parent one, parent two,
right,
just like
right,
it
right.
is with the state of California. Right. Why? So
and
so
they changed that.
They did.
Guardian one, guardian two.
I've seen some of those.
Yeah. That is
yes.
so
yeah.
great.
Parent one, parent two.
Making waves everywhere, Lane. I love it. Like you are challenging every system.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it seems like you've been like really a success in doing so.
That's
you know what I mean?
Call them Dr. Change, Dr. Dad.
I know. I need to have your girls on the station, though. Like, I would love their point of view of things. You know what I mean?
I love children that come up in our house.
My son was here and did the show.
So I'm going to have to get my kids in here. I'm blessed to have three of them crazy. All girls, too. Jesus. And a granddaughter. But,
I love it.
But you know what? It's because of individuals like you. And that's why I was saying earlier in our show, with you being the change that you wanted to see, and actually
fighting the power, not taking no for an answer, but not taking a no.
That's what I love about this, and just now we can see it through your book
mm-hmm.
and through your lenses of for all negative people that's in mainstream America. I'm sorry that there are success stories that come from same gender loving homes. And I know quite a few.
So do we.
And when we look at the kids, and no shade, family, because I know I have a few family members watching. No shade. I look at them like, dang, your kid messed up again?
Yeah.
You don't know where the baby daddy or baby mama is? And then we go right over to uncle and uncle's house and auntie and auntie's house. And we're celebrating graduations, we're celebrating promotions, we're celebrating individuals getting married. So I mean, I think it's the love, and I commend you. I thank you so much for everything that you, your husband, and your daughters do.
It's our story. It's not
my story.
I love it. It's a whole story. I love that.
Yeah.
Man, like I said, I really want them to come into the station and talk and, you know, their point of view of things, you know what I mean? Because it, you know, even though in the household it seems a very natural and everyday thing, you know, raised by two dads, I'm sure outside and TV, you know, they hear all these different things.
I mean, other people may come from like some very negative points of view and stuff. I tend to say, well, that's what you think. Maybe you think that because you're ignorant or arrogant.
Yes.
So I kind of feel like, okay, part of my job, I think, as a speaker is to maybe give you a different perspective. So I've been on some very conservative shows. You know, there was one I remember. The whole interview, he was like throwing stuff in it, like we were like kind of sparring, I would say. And he would ask, and I'm like, okay, what can I do with this? So he asked me a question. He said, well, you're gay. Your partner is gay. Did you raise your kids gay?
What?
And I was like, okay, what can I do?
So I hope.
Said, so I said, well, you know what? We have to, our kids, we have to embrace them. We have to accept them as they are. And it just so happens that our both daughters are very, heterosexual.
Very heterosexual.
So we have to love them as they are. He actually cracked up. Right. We have to love them and meet them where they are. And we embrace them, we love them, even though they're heterosexual.
Right. Dare they.
We did do it in a gay way. We raised them in a gay way. We really did.
And then I thought, can I push it further? And I said, you know what? They both have boyfriends, and we like their boyfriends. Mm-hmm. And I really think they got their good taste in men from their dad.
I love that.
Love it.
And you know what I said? I want you to come back. He'll love it. Because, you know, it's just, you know. They, you know, we exposed
He's like,
them.
We got to go to commercial.
He told me that was the first gay person he ever interviewed. He had like 100-some episodes. I was the first
Really?
Person.
Wow.
I'm like, well.
That he know us.
Tells me more about you than about me. I know who I am now. You know me too. Yeah.
Well, here at KLBP 99.1 with Tea Time with Cinnamon, we're all gay, all day, all queer, all joy, all KLBP.
Yeah, we all the alphabets.
We're everything, all of it. So, and that's why I have this platform so that queer community could come on and everyone knows that we are functioning, fully functioning, positive people making strides in this world. I mean, hello, you raised human beings. And right. Look at, they sound like they're doing amazing. And I bet they're doing amazing for humanity as well. They're not out there, you know.
We're very, very proud. We've done what we could, but we're also proud of them. But but I would say, you know, kind of from a larger perspective, like as a parent, you know, try not to project your expectations on your kids, and especially when it comes to adoptive kids, because, you know, really there is no, you know, biological sort of continuation here. So trying to, like, you know, I was raised this way, this is who I, you know, I think my kids should be, and then kind of like, no, let's just set it aside and see who they are.
Oh, man, I know that.
And try to meet that.
Because,
try
you know.
To meet that.
In high school, like, jocks were not my favorite. Mm. And I said, man, if I have a kid, I do not want no jock. And guess what he is? He's a 6'6", 300-pound football player. And there is no way around it. He is a jock. And I'm like,
ah. And you know, that's funny.
But he's a good jock. He's a good boy. He's a good and very nice man. That, very nice and gentle giant.
We just want the best for our children,
yes,
right? Because like Dr. Dad was saying, you could always see yourself as being a dad. Guess what? So could I.
I know, right?
Very young.
Come on, Daddy.
I love telling my story, Daddy Breeze. Mm-hmm. I love telling that when we played house in preschool, I was always the dad. Mm-hmm. I was either the dad or the son. I was not the little daughter. I was not going to be mom.
Same.
So to grow up, I always knew the role that I would take. It was the one of protector. It was the one of provider. It was the one to groom either my son or my daughter to be the best king or queen they could be, like my dad did for me.
Yeah.
So when we say intentional, it's like, I chose you. I didn't, you know,
exactly.
It's not so much I chose to have you, because women, you know, because I don't want y'all jumping on me now, they do choose to have their babies.
Ultimately, it's the woman who produces the child.
Right, exactly.
So
but for us, and I say us because, again, I biologically knew I wasn't going to carry any children, but, hey, I didn't have to stay with your mom. You know, I didn't have to stay in this situation. Or for us that adopt, I didn't have to stay to have you, but I did. And you know what? That should show you how much I love you. I'm not going to be right all the time because I'm learning. I'm growing. I want to be the best parent I could be to you, because of the adoption, I might not know that feeling of void, but if I can put anything there to fill it, because I can't replace it, to know that you're loved with all this extra love I'm giving you.
Right.
And then anything else I can't give you, how can I support you? That's what I think our people, or I should say the people that's making these decisions need to be looking at our character.
Well, listen, we only have like 5 minutes. Can you believe that?
What?
Yeah.
Already?
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
Bree, what I heard you say, like, you had a really good role model as your father.
Father and mom. Yes.
I often get asked, so you're two guys raising two girls.
Yes.
How does it work? I'm like, you know, when it comes to love and care and all that, it works the same as any, like, our neighbor next door.
Exactly.
But we wanted to raise them with an exposure to what it means to be a woman today in this society.
And how did you do that?
There are women.
How did you go about that?
So our closest friends, just like I said, it was just two of us. John's parents passed away. My family is pretty far. And so just the two of us. So our support network were strong mothers, strong mothers. And we were kind of like, we were blessed to be surrounded by them. Because, and blessed also because our daughters grew up seeing them and know, like, that's who I
want to be.
Yes. Right? That's who I want to be. That's what it takes to
be
confident, to be successful. And I'm so in some ways that they're doing so well today is part of being exposed to strong role models in your childhood.
Yeah.
You know,
my son was also raised.
Identify with.
My son was also raised by strong women, mm-hmm. He also had a couple of men, influences as well, you know, that took him in as well, but mostly by women. And mm-hmm. I feel that's why he's so gentle. He's like so compassionate and
gentle,
so empathetic.
Gentle football player, wow.
He is, but don't
gentle
get
giant.
But don't cross him because he will let you have it. No. But anyway, so tell us really quick. I know you said you grew up in the Soviet Union,
right.
And you came out then. We have like 2 minutes to talk about your coming out story, if you can do that really quick on KLBP 99.1.
We left the Soviet Union. I came to the United States as refugees, as Jewish refugees from a country which was deeply anti-Semitic. I came out here, and I remember I was just speaking to the president of PFLAG LA the other day, and I said, I have a PFLAG story for you, because I was 22, 23 when I decided to formally come out to my parents, so I kind of scheduled a time to see them. I was at college, so kind of like, I need to meet my father separately, my mother separately. And I called PFLAG, and they said they had a brochure for the parents called Now That You Know. And she said, well, what's your background? I said, well, my both parents are, you know, Russian, from the Soviet Union, Russian. She's like, oh, my God.
that's exactly what I said.
That's going to be tough. This was before he'd arrived, really.
Man.
So, but they each took it their own way. And ultimately, I think the acceptance is not about your background, but I think about how much you love your child. And in that case, actually, I'm very, very close to my father.
Mm.
Like Yorbury, I'm very close to my dad. Yeah. And he's been a very close, supportive, loving presence in our lives and in the lives of our kids. And he flies down from Northern California for events. We go see him, and so ultimately, just like I was telling you, my husband's mother,
yes.
Pentecostal, grew up rural, mm-hmm. out in the country, grape farm, but she was accepting of him. She loved him, and she and I, her son's partner at the time, had a very good, very close, very loving relationship. So it's really not the background, it's not the education. It's who you are. It's who you are. And so if there are allies, parents that accept us, huge shout out to you, because we need them. I know we need them.
Oh, we have a few.
Thank you so much, Lane Igualdin, yes. for coming in. You could get his book at.
Okay, you can find him on my website, mm-hmm. laneigoudin.com, laneigoudin.com, or you can find it on Bookshop, and you can find the ebook on Amazon.
Your handles are?
And my handles at Lena Gooden on Instagram and Facebook.
Thank you so much. And you want
to
leave us?
Email
You want to leave us with a positive note? Like, I like to, give people positive uplift little quote before we leave.
I think our story is a story representing the first generation of out LGBTQ mm-hmm. parents
mm-hmm.
says that. Claim your space.
Mm-hmm.
Even in an institution which is traditionally as heterosexual, as family, claim your space.
Yes.
We did it, and so should you.
I love it. That's so gorgeous.
This was a powerful show and not long enough.
This is a great show.
Oh, my God, this was not long enough.
This is KLBP 99.1 you're listening to, and this is Tea Time with Cinnamon. And we will be back next week. Thank you so much, Lane, for coming in.
Thank you.
And we need to have you back on that deluxe version. And we will see you next week. But for now, we've been talking about daddies. Let's talk about mother. This is her confession to One Step Away, which has been one of my favorite songs so far on the album. Where's my pink veil? Bye, everybody. Have a great day.